Hello, this is Matt, and you're listening to Microbe Talk, the podcast from the Microbiology Society. Over the last decade or so, the area of microbiome research has exploded. You may have even heard a previous podcast discussing whether microbiome research is an opportunity or whether it's been overhyped. However, despite the increased interest in microbiomes, in the area of the gut microbiome, one group of microorganisms is conspicuous by its absence in the literature.
So my name is Glenn Gibson. I'm a microbiologist at the University of Reading. I've been working on human gut microbiology for a long, long time now, over 30 years, in fact. Before that, I worked on the microbiology of sediments in sea lochs and estuaries.
And my name's Grace Ward, and I'm a PhD student from the University of Reading. My PhD research is looking into the role of yeast in the gut, specifically looking at IBS and IBD patients.
So Grace, you said some acronyms there. Could you just explain what those are?
So IBS is irritable bowel syndrome, and IBD is inflammatory bowel disease. They're both chronic disorders of the gut. Both suffer from abdominal pain and altered bowel function. They're very often misdiagnosed. They're very similar in symptoms.
Glenn, you said you've been researching the microbiome for a while now. When people discuss the microbiome, it's generally called a relatively new discipline. Could you just give a quick introduction into microbiome research in general?
Sure. Well, the main area of interest for human microbiome and indeed animal microbiome is the gut. So this has been around in research terms for a long, long time now, but it often gets called a new field or an emerging field or whatever. I don't know whether it's not a new field, but certainly it has broadened over the last 5 to 10 years. And I think that has been great because, new disciplines have got interest in the area. When I first started, it was just a kind of a niche microbiology area, if you like. But nowadays, obviously, microbiologists are interested, nutritionists are interested, biochemists, molecular biologists, and these have all brought really nice techniques to help us understand far better what's going on. So we're able to, assess the functionality, the predisposition to disease, what maybe we can do about that to mitigate against certain disorders, and even, therapeutically address some of them. So it's opened up a whole new area of scientific interest.
So you mentioned that your specific area of research is the gut microbiome. Could you just tell us a little bit about that area?
Well, the gut microbiome is more or less acquired at birth. We are relatively sterile until we, come into this big, bad, dirty world, if you like. We get inoculated pretty much there and then. And bacteria find this very warm, nutritious, fairly comfortable environment for their growth. And, often very hostile environments can sustain microbial life. And so the human gut is actually pretty easy for them to colonize. Populations do differ depending on whether we're thinking about the stomach, the small intestine or the large intestine. And there are about 10 to the power 12 bacteria in every gram of human large intestinal contents. And if you multiply that by 100 or 200, being how much contents are in the large intestine at any one time on average, and that's, that number 10 to the 14 is enormous. It's trillions and trillions of cells. And there are estimates that that's 90-95% of all the cells in the body. So these have a very profound impact upon our digestive process. And there can be positive or negative consequences for that. And I think a lot of the excitement in the area is that hitherto disorders where we thought really that not much you can do about them and maybe written off to genetics like diabetes, other aspects of the metabolic syndrome, cognitive function, may well have an interest or involvement from the gut microbiome. And I think that's really raised the whole interest and profile of the area. So there's a lot going on, a lot under the radar. Nobody really wants to overhype the area, but it could be crucial for improving health and tackling a lot of the 21st century's major ailments.
So just before I come to you, Grace, Glenn, could you tell us where the focus has been on gut microbiome research in terms of types of microorganisms?
I think because of the sequencing, most attention has been towards bacteria, actually, but we do know that other microbes occur in the gut, like viruses, yeasts, parasites. These are, I would say, are much less well understood, but they are certainly there. And again, in very high numbers, there's probably more viruses than bacteria, actually. But I'm a bacteriologist, so I always think working on bacteria is a little bit easier. And I know a lot of bacteriologists throw their hands in the air at this, is a little bit easier than looking at things like yeasts and viruses, etc. So I don't know whether it's being technology driven, but yes, we do know more about bacteria than pretty much anything else in the microbiome.
Hi everyone, we'll hear from Grace in a moment, but first, Laura has a quick message about some opportunities at the Society.
Did you know the Microbiology Society awards over £300,000 in grants every year? Members of the Society can apply for grants of up to £5,000 to support them in attending scientific conferences, meeting collaborators abroad, hosting local events, and sharing their research with the public. We also have an international development fund to develop microbiology research in low and middle income countries. To find out how the Microbiology Society can support you, go to our website, microbiologysociety.org/grants.
So Grace, Glenn mentioned there that yeasts have been overlooked in gut microbiome research. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, so the research has heavily been focused on bacteria. I think one of the main reasons is yeasts have a much lower abundance in the gut. So they only account for about 0.1% of the total gut microbiota. And another reason is probably a lot of the methods used to be culture-based. And a lot of the yeast can't be grown, they can't be cultured. Whereas now more sequencing techniques are coming out, which is amazing. But we don't have the databases for yeasts set up as well as for bacteria at the moment. So it makes it difficult to study.
You said that they're in quite low abundance. If they are so low, why is it so important to find out the role of yeasts?
So previously, we've characterised good bacteria and bad bacteria. We know there are yeasts in the gut, Candida and Saccharomyces, they're the predominant yeast. And there have been associations of certain yeasts with certain diseases, and also some yeasts that have been recognised as being beneficial and used as probiotics. For example, Candida albicans is a gut commensal, which means that at normal levels, it exists as a harmless microbe. Whereas if there's dysbiosis in the gut from antibiotics, which kill the bacteria in the gut, or in an immunocompromised patient, it means that the Candida albicans can overgrow and potentially cause some of these symptoms in disorders such as IBS and IBD that I mentioned before. At the same time, Saccharomyces has been recognised as a probiotic. For example, Saccharomyces boulardii is used as a probiotic and has been found to reduce these symptoms. It has had some recognition to be good and bad, so it's just about exploring that and trying to find out how the yeast actually function in the gut. And if they cause the symptoms, how we can then modulate the yeasts to improve the symptoms.
You just mentioned dysbiosis. Could you quickly explain what you mean by that?
Sure. So the bacteria that make up the microbiota is usually very stable. When there's dysbiosis, that means that there is something to cause an instability in the composition and diversity of the microbiota. For example, antibiotics. Yes, they kill the pathogenic bacteria, but they also kill all the bacteria in the gut. And that causes an instability in the ecosystem, which allows for other species to overgrow, for example, Candida albicans.
So you mentioned that your research is looking into yeasts in the gut. What exactly are you doing?
So my research project is focused on assessing the ecological role of yeasts in the gut. Inflammatory bowel disease and irritable bowel syndrome have both been linked to yeast in the gut. So I plan to characterise the yeast that are found in the gut and see if there are any strong associations for a particular yeast that is maybe more highly associated with IBS and IBD. For example, Candida albicans is found at higher levels in patients with IBS and IBD. And Saccharomyces is found at lower levels in IBS and IBD. So really understanding what these yeasts could be doing and also looking at the function of these yeasts. So we're doing in vitro studies to look at what these yeasts are producing in the gut and how this could be then implicating symptoms.
You said before that you're in the initial stages of your PhD. What are the main hopes for the research in the end?
Absolutely, yeah. By understanding what yeast could be contributing to these symptoms, we can either modulate them through maybe probiotics, whether that be yeast probiotic or bacteria probiotics. Because another thing we're looking at is the interactions of different yeasts and bacteria in the gut. So, for example, if specific bacteria inhibits Candida albicans, we might be able to prescribe that as a probiotic to IBS or IBD patients to alleviate their symptoms by reducing the level of Candida albicans in the gut. And also understanding if there are any metabolites that these yeasts are producing in the gut that are causing these symptoms will really help us understand what treatments we could be developing to help these patients.
So finally, what's on the horizon?
One of the things that we're going to be very involved in the next few years is working with politicians and peers through a all-party parliamentary group on gut microbiome, which has just been set up. And the idea is really to take the communication up to that level of key opinion leader. One of the things that helped propel this was actually working with the Microbiology Society on a briefing note a few years ago, which is a really well-received document. And ultimately, these things help, you know, things like PPGs to get formed.
Thank you to Grace and Glenn for taking the time out to talk to me about their research. If you would like to learn a bit more about the gut microbiome or microbiomes in general, we do have a couple of explainer videos on our YouTube channel. I'll leave you some links in the description below. In the meantime, all reviews really do help, and if you could leave a review on your listening platform, it really would help us out. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode.